Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here. Thanksgiving Eve 2025, 11:26:25, 18 minutes past the hour. Now remember, we will be on for 4 hours this morning because we will not be on the air tomorrow because it's Thanksgiving. And that's one of the few days, I think the 5 days we take off every year here at the station. And Thanksgiving Eve has become a tradition around here. I'm not going to explain it all again because we did that in hour number one, but essentially Bob Welsh is here. He's got his Thanksgiving themed pizza. 4 years ago it was the turkey pizza. 3 years ago it was the pumpkin pie pizza. Last year it was the cranberry pizza. This year we don't know. We're going to find out as the morning progresses. And also trying to come up with names for the Upper Crust Society so we can induct those people on Friday. And we've also started the list for the Fruitcake Toss 2025. December 11th is when it'll be, 7 p.m. here at the station. So far, Chip is in, Bob is in, and his niece Mariah Rudolph is in. And if you want to nominate somebody, 740-383-9944. Doesn't cost any money. Just nominate somebody and let that person know they have been nominated. Also, if you want to suggest somebody to be in the Upper Crust Society, you can do that, 740-383-9944. Bob Welsh continues to join us in the studio this morning, and joining us for the duration of the morning is somebody we've had on a lot, and glad to have him back. He's been on via telephone as he's been away at school, but he's passing through Marion this morning, so it's the holidays. You visit with family and friends at the holiday time, so here he is, the second youngest Democrat to go to the Democratic. I'm just going to say youngest. We don't even know who that other person is. Forget it.
It was nepotism. It was some like state senator's kid.
See, we don't need that. Right. Oh, see, right there. Yeah. Disqualification. Disqualification.
They don't count.
No, we just pulled him right out. The youngest person to go to the National Democratic Convention in Chicago in 2014, Christian Pearson. Christian, good to have you back here.
It is great to be back. It's great to be anywhere, especially, you know, when you're in college, you don't do much moving around traveling wise, so it's nice to be.
I took it as a compliment until you said it was great to be anywhere. Then I thought, well, it could be like great to be at the gas station this morning.
Well,
he means it's good to be alive.
Yeah, it's
well, I think we all feel that.
Good to be alive. It's good not to have a textbook in my hand. It's nice to have a couple days off, which it's the fact that it's already Wednesday is just mind-boggling to me.
How's college?
It's busy, you know. I'm in the our government relations lobbying network. I've been to D.C. twice this semester. I'm in our student government. I go to a college Democrats meeting, you know, when I can. But I'm in six classes. It's, you know, busy.
Did you go down and visit the grounds of the ballroom?
We walked right up to the gate. They would not let us in, even though we said that we were guests of the vice president.
Really?
Yeah, we said because, you know, JD's from that part of the state, so.
I'll tell you, remind me to talk about something, and I don't want to become too political on Thanksgiving Eve, but I saw something yesterday. It was so funny to me. I should have pulled the clip, but we'll just talk about it. It is so funny. Remind me to bring that up later on. Let's get to the stuff at hand here first, though. Christian, do you have any nominations for the Fruitcake Toss, December the 11th?
Not presently.
You got 3 hours.
I have 3 hours
to come up with some names.
Actually, you can wait until December 10th, even.
Yeah,
but we don't want to. You don't want to bring it out. You gotta let the people know.
I might wait until December 10th, at, you know, 11:59, and just kind of see.
Get him in there.
See where that takes us.
He might bring up his whole poly group. You know.
Yeah, you should bring the whole group.
You know.
I'll try.
JD tossers or something like that.
Why not? You tossed last year, did you not?
No,
you weren't here for that?
No, I was not able to toss last year.
God.
And I would do it this year, but that is I have two exams that day on the 11th.
On the 11th.
And then I have one on the 12th, first thing in the morning.
The good thing is, I'm assuming you're a day student, and so your exams are in the morning. You could
be here by 7 that night.
By 7, you know, so you could do it.
Yeah, cost that thing.
Then on your way back to Cincy, you could just, you know, put on one a tape or something of your class, you know, so you can be studying while you're driving. And yeah, you could do it.
Event of the holiday season.
It is the event of the holiday season. That's what they're saying.
That's what they say every year.
It's kind of like a beer run, Molly. It's a fruitcake run.
Now, as far as people who should be a part of the Upper Crust Society, do you have any names?
I'm going to, you know, kind of swallow my pride here and say I'm not very familiar with the Upper Crust Society.
Bob, go ahead.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. Explain it again.
He's a local. Has he been to the fruitcake?
I know.
He probably hangs out at the peanut push.
Oh. the peanut push. I feel so bad for the peanut push, but go ahead.
The Upper Crust Society was and Scott is remiss in not having his plaque here in the studio.
I have it at home, proudly displayed.
That way people could be pointed to see, there's the Upper Crust Society, there's the plaque right there.
I don't want to show off.
Yeah. You
say that like I do want to show. No, there's nothing in here.
Everything in here is autographed.
Well, yeah, but not to me.
Well,
we've got obituaries on the wall. We've got all kinds of stuff like that.
But anyway, the Upper Crust Society for Christians' Benefit is a society that we started to honor the people who have contributed something to Marian society.
They don't have to live here.
They don't have to live here. No. And they don't have to be in imminent danger of dying anytime soon either, although some have.
Some have passed away. You're right. They have. Now, can you run down the list of Upper Crust Society members?
Yeah, just so we know who we're dealing with here.
Well, the very first, of course, was Scott.
Right.
Then Mary Ellen, George Kasotis, Buckeye Guy, Jack Kellogg, Mary Ann Michaels, Sheriff Bales, I guess.
Sheriff Bailey.
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 Yeah. Bailey. Yeah, that's right. Bailey has Irish coffee there.
There you go.
And Brenda Donegan.
Brenda Donegan. That's the list.
That's the list so far. And so we're looking for people who have a touch on American society, you know, to bring into the...
Now, so far, the names we have discussed, Bob Bender, longtime journalist around here. We've discussed Larry Barnett, umpire. Former Major League umpire. So, who springs to your mind?
You know, it's been quite a year for Joanne Kasotis, and, you know, next year might be her last in office. So, you know, I feel like she would be a good one.
There's a new name we haven't thought of.
Well, and her husband's in there.
That's right.
Yeah, she would be the first couple.
Now, if Scott got married quickly, we can get his wife in there.
I know.
That's right. We'll slip her in. Ashley Williams.
Ashley Williams.
Yeah.
Is this the thing that we're announcing, that you're engaged or something?
Not yet.
So
not yet.
So basically, what I gather is the Upper Crust Society is predominantly people who are at Mary Ellen's birthday party. Brenda Donegan, Buckeye Guy, you. Joanne, if you put her in,
George has went on to his reward though by that time.
But George was there with us in spirit.
Mary Ann has went on to her reward.
That's probably why I by that point. Invited.
Listen, I don't know who did the guest list for that. Frankly, don't blame me for that. Yeah. I didn't send the invitation.
There were as I was leaving, I at least five names came to mind of people who definitely should have been there, and
they wouldn't have fit.
No, they
we
would
were
not.
Full. We were full. We were at capacity.
We were at, you know, and I with all respect to, you know, everybody, but I don't think it was helpful that, you know, we were in a retirement home ballroom where, you know, some of the occupants needed aids to move around, you know, like a chair or a cane.
I didn't invite them.
That really made it tough to squeeze in there.
There are times when I need aides to move around.
You know what? Listen, I did not pick the venue. I don't want that laid at my doorstep.
But, I'm thinking, you know, there was that giant, like, exercise room right across the hallway. I mean, we could have done it in there.
No, I can't tell you why we couldn't do it over there, but there was a reason.
There are too many people on treadmills
already. I think you know the reason.
I never heard
the reason about
no,
that?
No.
Oh, I'll tell you during the break. I can't tell you.
But it was a big open room.
No. That got squashed early on in the...
And then you had the... and then you had the Pepsi machine that would go and be so, because it was right behind Sean and the camera.
Well, who chose to know that? How could we know the Pepsi
well,
machine?
Well, I mean, we found that out pretty fast after, you know, it was mid someone's speech. I think it was in the middle of...
I didn't realize you had such hostility about this birthday party until just now.
No, or the one thing that made me not super happy is that, you know, I had a bit of a head cold that day, so when we ate the cake, I couldn't taste any of the cake, which just was a real waste.
You know, since we're picking bones here on Thanksgiving Eve morning, I have a little bone to pick with you about this event.
Go ahead.
Okay, now, no, because you did a fine job, and
But,
you got it. Okay, now, you were tasked with something that night.
Yes.
Now, it's a hard job to do, but what was your task of the night?
To make sure that the videos played in order.
Which you did. That was great.
And that the music played.
Yeah, that was all good. You had another test.
That the mics worked.
All good.
To stop Bob Taft from leaving when he was very hell-bent on getting out of there.
I
kept Governor Taft at bay, much to his chagrin.
Now, hold on. No. That's not the one I'm talking about. But, by the way, yeah, that didn't turn out as well as I would have hoped. But, no, you had another task. Are you forgetting your other task?
Apparently.
The, Kucinich video.
We lost Dennis Kucinich. No. To get a there was a certain group of people who were arriving that you were supposed to take off into another room and get like 10 minutes of video thoughts from them on Mary Ellen's career.
And I did that for everyone except Allison Russo.
Okay, let's run this down. Now, who were the people? Because we had a list.
Yes.
That you were supposed to get.
And it's the list is still in my car.
All right, here we go. Now, I'm going to... Listen, I've seen the videos now, so I can speak to this directly. Okay, go ahead.
So it was... I'm thinking... It was my grandmother. It was Rich. It was Scherzer. It was David Pepper. It was Bob Taft. Ted Strickland. There should have been Allison Russo, but she kind of slipped away.
That's okay.
Who else?
I mean, that was it.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the heavy hitter group from outside of town, Bob.
Okay.
Now, on that list, who to you would be the most significant videos of the list? You want to hear the list again?
No, I heard it.
Okay. Who to you would be the most significant videos on that list?
His grandmother.
Well, to him, yes. Yes, yes, yes,
yes. Yes, to me.
Yes.
Probably the former governors.
Yes, that's what I think. Okay. So, now... how long would you say Ted Strickland's video was?
So long.
So, wonderful. How long would you say Bob Taft's video is?
Not so long.
Because...
He had a golf game.
No. This is before the event. Because...
I am going to guess that I did not... That the journalist in me was not as it should have been. I did not push and pry for follow-ups. I asked
You cut
him
Bob Taft off.
I cut him off?
You did, I believe. Now, and here's what I was confused, because now, like, David Pepper, God bless him, good enough guy,
mm-hmm.
You let him go on. Mayor Scherzer, you let
can
him...
Can I tell you why I probably cut Taft off?
Cut Bob Taft off. We got, like, 3 minutes of Bob Taft. One question, and Christian, like, enough. And I think
because
I know why, but I don't want to...
There were several people arriving at that time, and I was trying to... I think Rich had probably just walked in, and I remember...
He has a long video.
And I remember Rich was, like, you know, patient A, because he had to leave. So I was trying to... What we should have done is told Governor Taft to get here at 5:45. Governor
Strickland...
Well,
he came from the furthest distance, too. Bob Taft came from Dayton.
Governor Strickland, get here at 5:50. It's like, you know, we should have given everyone a 5-minute window so you can. But no, I think it was just the, of course the stakes were so high just to get everybody on tape. So I think that's why I probably cut him off, was the fact that there were other people arriving that I had that were, you know.
But I don't think Bob Taft would have got up and left. He seemed very comfortable in that. This was before the event.
I don't know how that stool was very uncomfortable. Looked very
He looked like he was going to talk some more.
You know.
Listen, all I'm saying is there is a commonality there in that group.
There is a commonality.
And the Bob Taft is the odd man out.
Well, then, was that because he's Republican?
I don't want to bring that up, cross my mind.
So perhaps it just reflects upon the anti-Republican bias of this station.
There you go. I have heard that does go on here. Listen, the man is a former governor.
He is a former governor.
He gave probably the best speech that night.
Which, speaking of, do we have the audio and video copies of these speeches?
Well, I would hope you do.
Well, no, like the ones by Taft that he gave.
Oh, you mean the actual event?
Yeah, the event.
Yes, okay. Yes, we do. Yes, okay, we do. Good.
They're in the closet.
But and I let Taft speak for as long as he wanted to. So there's no bias in me. I didn't cut him off. But here's the man who came the farthest from Dayton.
Came the farthest.
Yeah, he wins that award. He's a former governor of two-term governor of Ohio. He is the great-grandson of William Howard Taft, the former president of the United States and Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And Christian cuts the man off. And we've got the video proof of this. Cuts him off. 3 minutes, Governor Taft. That's it. Governor Strickland, you can go on for 15. Governor Taft, 3 minutes. Shut up. Get out. Goodbye.
I think I cut off Strickland at one point because I saw Mr. and Mrs. Schertzer. They were hovering by the door. Because
well, let them hover. You've got Governor Taft. You've got the grandson, great-grandson of President William Howard Taft.
You know, Scott, I'm sure that the next time you're in Dayton, he will welcome you to his home, and then you guys can rehash this.
He might be upset about the video.
You should have seen him right after his speech ended. He walked right to the restroom, then, you know.
And he came back.
But then after, like, he, you know, darted to the door, and he had, you know, there were so many residents that wanted to talk to him, and one in particular.
I have to drive to Dayton.
I have a picture on my phone of Governor Taft and several random Primrose residents.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how to get these pictures to these Primrose residents.
Oh my! Well, the fan club was there.
Yeah, it's already burned into my mind.
Well, Bob, what do you think? Do you think there was some bias there against Governor Taft?
Well, I think any politician who wants to talk is going to talk, you know, ad nauseum. And so, I mean, if Taft didn't...
No, but he didn't. That's what I said. That if you look at the time, if he had gone on 15 minutes, I could see cutting the man off. So but we've got like three... Hey, you came from Dayton, 3 minutes. Goodbye. Go sit down.
So maybe Taft is just as guilty.
No, Taft was still talking. He was like mid-conversation.
Oh, well then. See, I don't know because I wasn't there.
I think we
could have set you in the bathroom or something.
Make sure you wash the hands.
We could have put you right behind the bar.
That's where I would have been anyway.
Yeah. There you are. But no, I mean it was a little odd. I didn't realize that had happened.
I didn't realize it either. I mean, but
it was an implicit bias.
Probably it wasn't. I mean, you know, in my
David Pepper, he's just rambling on. But Governor Taft, no.
Well, maybe he was just. Chris was just adhering to the list, and he saw, you know, shirts were coming up, and he goes, oh my gosh, he's the next guy on the list. I got to cut this guy off.
But I said that would have to happen with one of these other guys, Pepper or Schertzer or Cordray or Strickland.
Well, I think, honest to goodness, I think this is what happened, because there was such an emphasis on Cordray, because he had to leave first, and I think he was walking in as Taft started, and I think... That's what's and you know I'm not a very forceful person.
No, but on that list, who would be your top dogs?
It would be, you know, I'm gonna hope that my grandmother is not listening right now.
No, grandmother, I like that.
But she gave a great speech. But it's Taft and Strickland.
Yeah,
but I think Strickland gave you enough content to sort of make up for what we lost with Governor Taft.
But I think Governor Taft, here's why I felt Governor Taft was significant. Number one, governor, and for all the reasons I've said, his history. But number two, he was the Republican. He is the one who you think would not be praising Mary Ellen, but he also was the one who was in office when she became Treasurer of the United States, so he's also there then. He's got that connection.
You know, he is... everyone's favorite. He was everyone's favorite Republican in that room because
he killed him.
Without him, there would be no Ted Strickland. There would be no Sherrod Brown. So, you know, I think even though he didn't get to, I did not let him speak for as long as
cut him off.
Even though I hastily cut the 67th governor of Ohio off. I think he was 68, 7.
You know what I did think was odd that night, though? God bless Governor Taft. He did give the best speech. You have to admit that.
Oh, you know. He did.
He gave the best speech. Because he sat there and listened for 90 minutes to Democrat this and Democrat
that. Jim Jordan video.
Jim Jordan puppet.
Oh,
yeah. He listened to it all. This good Republican, grandson of William Howard Taft. And he got up there, and I thought, oh, he's got to be just, ugh. And he got up there and he said, you know, I'm Governor Bob Taft, and I'm every Democrat's favorite Republican. And they gave a great speech.
Yeah, he really did give a good speech.
So, you know, I got to hand it to the governor.
Yeah.
Even though he'd been cut off earlier in the
night. And, you know, we got him to stay that extra time to take that picture with you and Mary Ellen.
Ended up in the paper.
Ended up in the paper, you know.
Yeah. So I was enjoying.
And I think you were the most famous person in that picture.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, there you go. Well, you know how that goes.
Yeah.
740-383-9944. Maybe we get Bob Taft up here for the Upper Crest Society.
Maybe.
He probably can only stay about 3 minutes.
Yeah.
We'll have to get him out. Usher him on out the door.
Do you have a golf course close by that he could be playing at?
Thank you to Governor Taft. You've got to go. He's a very tall man.
He's very tall. Is Governor Taft a golfer?
Oh, yes.
See, you could have made friends with him.
I didn't know this.
You didn't know.
I mean, hell.
I wonder if we could get him here for the fruitcake toss. I'd pay money to see Governor Taft out there tossing a fruitcake.
He would already start with a heck of an advantage.
What a nice man, though, he was.
Very nice man. Very nice. Driving all that way.
Dayton.
And, oh, I know, you know, when you're, you know... When, you know, just it's hard to drive, especially that drive to Dayton, you know, from Marion at night.
At night?
All the deer, you know.
He probably didn't get home till 1 a.m.
I don't know.
Do you think when Nan Whaley has a dinner party, she invites Governor Taft over?
No.
Since they're both in Dayton?
No. I don't know if she's having many dinner parties.
Does she have that many friends?
That's a good question.
I mean, I really don't know if the woman's got a lot of friends. Now, this could be, I don't know, this could be spam. It says potential spam. This could be spam.
I got a spam story.
Go ahead, caller. Oh, that's spam. I heard the blank. Phone lines are open. 740-383-9944. Maybe that's Governor Taft.
740-383-9944. They might be too open if you're getting spam calls.
Yeah, normally I've never gotten a spam call here that I can remember, but it said potential spam. Why does it come up potential spam?
I mean, it could be potential spam, and it's a president, you know?
Oh, wouldn't that be something?
Wouldn't that be something?
Well.
There is a diner close to my house that makes some of the best Italian subs that you'll ever have. And I call there once a week or so to place an order. I called there 1 week, and I got through, and I said, "Would you quit calling?" And they hang up on me.
You know, ooh, that's bad.
And so I called back. You go, and apparently, my number started showing up as spam, you know, potential spam, you know. And so they thought that I was not a customer, but a spam person. So I finally got the order in, and I went there. And while I'm waiting in line, said, "Let me test this out. Let me call you and see what came up." I called them, and it came up as spam. You know, having been a regular customer for, you know, multiple years, all of a sudden I'm on the spam list.
Maybe you thought you were ordering spam.
Maybe.
Could be. Now, Christian, I've got to get your opinion on this because you're missing the golden age of Marion politics.
Oh, absolutely.
As a Marion.
And this is, you know, if I were not in college, I would have run for that charter commission. I would have been, you know. Now,
that
really wouldn't have, you know, yeah, that wouldn't have really come to much fruition, but God, that would have been fun.
You know, I have been in the media here for nearly a quarter century now, and I refer to this time as the golden age of Marion politics, this fourth quarter of 2020.
And who is at the helm of it all? You have Mayor Collins, you have Sheriff Bales, you have, you know, Councilwoman Lang, Councilwoman Stoneburner, you have Councilman Prater, which this is my million-dollar question. Everyone else on council is their first name, yet Ron Prater is always Mr. Prater. I'm curious why.
Here we go.
No, I'm curious why just I mean, why don't you just call them all Mr. Ratliff, Mr. Barr, Mrs. Stoneburner, Mr.
Oh, this is a me question.
You know, this is the golden age of Marian politics.
It certainly is.
When we have to go down all of the players.
So your question is...
Why is it Mr. Prater exclusively? Why don't you apply the Mr. or Mrs. to everybody?
Because I don't think there are a whole lot of Twilas. And I think people know who I'm talking about. And usually when I say Jason, I say Jason Schauber.
Yes.
And heirs, again, I don't think there are a lot of heirs.
No, it's just him and his father right. are the only two people named heirs.
I think I say Rollins.
Yes.
Okay. So I use his last name.
Yeah.
And the others, I don't think...
Are really...
They're not necessary at this point. They're not making news. So I have to... Because if I said Ron, that there are a lot of Rons.
But why is it Mr. and why is it Mr. Prater and not just Prater?
What would you like me to call him?
I mean, but then why isn't it Mr. Rollins?
Okay.
You know?
You don't want me to call the man Mr. Prater is what you don't
no,
like
No,
it.
No. I'm just curious what is the difference?
He's an older gentleman.
That's a satisfactory answer.
Yeah. And I don't think when you have a last name like Smith, you know,
there's...
You take the part of the name that is most significant.
Yes.
Like Ralph, that's unique.
Yes.
That's all.
Which, yeah, I mean, if you thought Smith was a popular last name, just go to the council.
There's two.
I mean, that's if there's two on a 9-person body, that means, you know, if we apply that same ratio to the whole city, that's like several thousand Smiths.
So here we are in the golden age of Marian politics.
It's golden.
And you've left. What a time to leave.
I know. What?
I mean, I don't know. What's wrong
what
with you?
What a time to go to college. I mean, you know.
You really are missing it.
Yeah.
So what do you make of the golden age of Marian politics?
I think that the city of Marion is getting what it wanted when it went to the polls 2 years ago.
Is it really? I don't think they wanted 10% budget cuts across the board.
They're getting what they deserve, not what they wanted.
Well, to say get what they deserve implies that it's punitive. I mean, you know, let's go back. You know, why are we in a budget shortfall? You know, when was the last time that the city ran a budget that was not in the red? Was it 2019, 2020? Was it in that, or was it? These are questions, you know, who you elect has consequences, even if they are not, you know, even if those consequences aren't seen for several years down the line, you know, if you elect someone who, you know, is not experienced or, you know, that or the other, then that will eventually show up. And now, you know, it's showing up and that we're, you know, the city's going to have to make deep budget cuts. I mean, you were talking about it in the last hour. Police, fire, EMS, sanitation, and transit, you know, especially transit, that's your public service that a lot of people rely on. And when those people don't have a bus to ride or, you know, there are fewer stops, or there are fewer routes, people are really going to be mad, but they're not really, you know, no one's going to have anybody to blame except, you know, their fellow citizens.
When the mayor was asked on Monday night by one of his own council people, Thaddeus Smith, are the rumors true? Are people going to be laid off? And he said, I don't know.
Which that is, you know, I'm not impugning anything upon the mayor's character. I don't think any of us would. You've got to know. You are the chief executive of the city of Marion. You know, who has been in financial woes since, you know, you were the police chief. You at least have to have some idea in the back of your head. And even if you're not sure, you can still brace people for the worst. I mean, that's what a leader is supposed to do. If, you know, you're not up for re-election for another 2.5 years, you know, I think it's would be safe to say, I think it would be better for him if he had just admitted, yes, but we're going to get through it. We are going to take decisive action. You know, if hope is really Marion's economy, if you really love your city, if you want to feel right at home, you know, we're going to have to make these cuts. We're going to have to make these layoffs, but, you know, it will all be for the best in the long run. You know, you've got to put on a game face, and I don't think the mayor did that by avoiding the question.
What do you think, Bob?
I have to agree. I mean, I think he nailed it. I mean, a leader is supposed to lead and not be out there, I don't know. I mean, where are the solutions? I mean, where is the path that we should be following to get out of this?
And we have spent so much money on economic development and budget director and, like, so much related to economics and finance. You would have thought we would have an answer for this. Or we could have at least seen this coming. Like, but I guess not. I guess that's too sophisticated for us.
Will it hurt them politically?
Probably not.
Really? See, I think people are angry about this. I think when you lay off firefighters, you lay off police officers, you hang up a fire station that people feel they have voted for and paid for, you don't do sanitation projects, sewer projects, you lay off sanitation workers, I think that ticks people off.
Will the FOP endorse whoever runs against Collins in 27? Will the Firefighters Union not endorse, you know, the mayor and all the Republicans in 27?
Depends how many people they cut.
I mean, I would be curious what Chief McDonald thinks, because he is, you know, very big figure in the FOP statewide and nationally. You know, is there any influence that he can wield to sort of blunt the blow for law enforcement? You know, that's
I am kind of surprised nobody's standing up for their employees yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the people in the long run will remember what directly impacted them. And if their garbage is not getting picked up, they'll remember that.
Yes, they will.
If their house burns down and no firemen come to the rescue, they'll remember that.
Well, but we have house fires here in Marion, but there are a lot of people who fall down at home, elderly population, and if they can't get an EMS worker there and they have to lay on the floor quite a while,
they'll remember that.
And yeah, I mean,
if they're around for the next voting.
Which, I don't know, that's the big thing about all this. Local government, you know, you are rarely interacting with the federal government, even though that's what everyone seems to vote on. You don't interact much with the state government. Local government is, for the average person, that is where your interaction with the government is coming from, because they're providing all of these essential services. And if these essential services are, you know, if you can no longer rely upon them, then, you know, you've got a problem. It's just, does the political infrastructure exist to form an opposition? Because, you know, the mayor, you know, the Republicans can really do whatever so long as they feel like they can, you know, cruise in to victory in the next election.
Bob and I talked about it in hour number one. I don't know if you heard it, but why so much contention Monday night over the 25,000 going to five different food, areas, those deserts.
Not enough people understood what these groups were. They may have thought, well, we're just doling it out to these random organizations that, you know, whatever makes them random. But at the same time, I remember in the wake, you know, the last time, you know, when it was approved the first time, there was a lot of conversation, because I think I had called in, you know, in the days after that. There was a lot of discussion about, was this a financially smart thing to do? And I think now that people have had time to sort of ruminate over that, you know, it's not a super popular thing anymore amongst the, because everyone in Marion's a budget hawk now, you know? I mean, that's just kind of what it seems like. But, I mean, the point of the government is to, you know, you do what you need to do to help people in crisis, and then you sort of pick up the chips after that. And, you know, I don't think you're going to turn down food to, you know, poor kids and poor families because you're, you know, you're in a budget shortfall. That's the part about that. That's something about being in government. You know, you might have to do uncomfortable things to get these essential services out to people, and then you fix your budget.
Yeah, but this was interesting because Ayers Radloff became rather emotional on Monday speaking about this, and Aaron Rollins became very angry when Twyla Lang spoke out against this, and Rob Smith also spoke out against this.
I did not listen. Like, why did Ayers become emotional? Why did Rollins become, like, what were the, you know,
well,
points
I think
in their speech that were really, like, making them emotional about
I'm
this?
Trying to remember, but I believe it was when Twyla first started talking about people getting their SNAP benefits back that Ayers felt that, maybe the vote wasn't going to go in that direction. And he started talking about if government's purpose is anything, it's to, you know, if we can take one fraction of 1%. And he started, he said, I think at one point, he said, I don't know why I'm becoming so emotional about this, but, you know, he teared up. And then Rollins' frustration came again from Twyla when Twyla wanted to take SNAP out of the legislation, the wording. And he just, he couldn't take it anymore.
I mean, if... And I've, you know, since I was like 13 or 14, like, I've had, you know, the idea, like, if there is to be a government at all, it is to help the most vulnerable. And, you know, if that's not something that the government can do, then what's the point of having a government around, you know? I mean, that's really what I think. So...
Well, but why are they taking heat over it, I guess, is my question.
Why's who taking heat over?
Ayers and Rollins. Seven people voted for it. It wasn't like it was just those two.
I mean, I think
they spoke on
it. I think it's the loud minority on Facebook, as happens with everything in Marion politics. You know, just people who don't understand, you know, why are you giving... You know, I'm sure it's people with, you know, I guess pure intentions. They want government money to be spent. Well, I don't know. But if in the minds of
a lot... Well, the argument is the government's broke. How could you do this?
And you know, the feds are back open and their SNAP benefits back out. But I don't think they were being paid retroactively. Like, I don't think people were still getting their November benefits because it was shut down on November. Is that right, or is that... I don't know.
I think they did get them retroactively.
I believe so.
Okay. Yeah. So,
but I don't know how quickly they got them.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of discussion about... you know, getting them, you know, 30 days late and so forth. And so even though they may at some point get all the retroactive benefits, they may not have them now.
This is what we were learning in my public administration class about the Flint water crisis and how that came to be because the Republican governor of Michigan wanted to, quote, run the state like a business. As a government, you cannot run your body like a business. You can't be expecting to turn a profit. Like, you know, I think that's what a lot of people are angry about here. They are expecting the government of the city of Marion to run like a business. That's not what a government is supposed to do. If you've got to go into the red to make sure that people get SNAP or these essential services, that's, you know, that's why government is there. And we've spent so much money on the stuff with, you know, economic development and, you know, fixing our budgets that, you know, this really should not be that big of a deal, you know, considering how much of the last several years has been spent talking about.
Yeah, the local government is required by state law to have a balanced budget.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, you're right, it should not be a business. It should be a self-balancing service to the people. The government should be filling in the gap to provide the people with what they cannot get otherwise. Roads, and in the early days it was hospitals and schools, you know, and public services, you know, the fire and the police, and then the utilities, you know, such as the garbage removal and things like that. You know, the government should be providing the services that the people themselves cannot provide, you know, on a business basis.
Yeah, and.
And the tax money going in should cover the expenses, you know. And if not, then you work to balance the budget. And if you can't balance the budget anymore, if you trimmed all the fat and everything else, then you go back to people and say, well, you know, if we're going to keep going, we need, you know, an increase. But we've trimmed all the fat. But you only get there by being open and honest about it.
Yeah, and everybody wants, you know, their taxes cut. Everybody wants, you know, less spending. But everyone wants the same services. And those services continue to get more expensive.
But what happened? We got to come to this question at some point. What happened here? Where did this problem begin? And how did we get to where we are today?
I think that is especially in the wake of who was running for charter and, you know, what came back up in the news. Did it start in 2019 and 2020? Or did it start in the Schertzer administration? Did it start in the Kellogg administration? When did our city's finances start to, you know, really go off the deep end. And as I, you know, I was only, you know, 13 or 14, but I remember reading the stories about Marion's finances in 2020 and 2021. I don't know if...
Well, I was on the air then.
You were on the air
I
then.
I certainly
so
was.
So I would say you would probably know better than anybody the answer to your own question. What was it, Robert Landon, or was it Kelly Carr, or what? You know, who was taking care of the books?
I don't think you can put it down to one person or even one group of people. I mean, it is a systemic problem that's been going on for a while. Like you said, there's been many, many years where the expenditures have exceeded the income, but who took their eye off of that? You know, when did we quit, paying attention to the fact that we are running in the red, and you go and do that for so many years before something has to change? And I don't think anybody was yelling about the red line there.
And I think it's really tough to be a budget hawk in a town where, you know, more people than average, you know, you go back to the 20% of Marion's on SNAP, where a disproportionate amount of the population relies on government services. It's hard to be a budget hawk. It's hard to make hard cuts to stay above the red. But now, you know, we're going to be in that position regardless. And, you know, a lot of people, they're not going to understand, because we're going to be in this budget shortfall with all these cuts, but the need for, you know, social services and support from the government will only continue to grow, which, I mean, that's sort of the, you know, timeless dilemma of government. And I don't know, just the way that the mayor handles this, I mean, he can still, you know, do something with this. I mean, he can still, you know, handle it the right way. It's just, how does he do it? I think you need, you know, transparency. You need to be kind of upfront with what, I don't know, what the moment requires.
Well, is the mayor capable?
You know,
because today is the day. Today's the day where all departments are supposed to have their 10% cuts to the mayor. And Monday, I think we're presented with the new budget, which will have to have more cuts than just that 10% to get to where he wants to get, $15 million. And, you know, where do you go from there?
Well, just looking at the simple math, I believe it was said that the mayor had a $19 million budget and a $15 million worth of income. Simple math tells you taking 10% from $19 million is not going to get you the $15
million. Yeah.
Right, and I think he said as much on Monday,
you know,
that they're still combing the budget, trying to find things that they don't need.
Another $3 million, which is another 15. So actually, you're looking at cutting close to 25%, not 10.
Which is where I think most of this will end up.
But if you're not honest at that point in time saying, we need to look at 20-25% cuts, 10% is not going to do it, unless you've got something in your back pocket that you're not telling us, then it's all for naught.
But how did it get here is what I keep saying. There, what city has to make 25% budget cuts when you are not having much of a change in your income?
You know, I think Bob's right. You can't peg it on one person or a group of people or even an administration. It's just it's evident that, you know, fiscal responsibility, making sure your budget is balanced and that you're set up for success, may not have been a huge priority of who was, you know, running the finances. Now, that might not be accurate, but, I mean, you need to go back, you know, probably the last 20 years and look at where things started to go really bad. I mean, I don't think there's a good answer, because everyone, you know, will, if you blame it on someone, everyone's going to disagree with that. But I don't know. I mean, there's not really much good that it'll do now, just because of the fact that, you know, this is a problem that is being faced now, and you can't really change anything. But
I don't find out.
And yeah, we'll find out.
Well, we're coming back. We've got an extended program today because we won't be on tomorrow. Bob Welch, Christian Pearson in the studio. Stay tuned. We'll be back in 15 minutes.
Set for lots of fun and fabulous prizes.
The audience went,
yeah!
And I went, well, what about me? What about mine?